All right, that's a lot of work to get ready, but I think we're set. What I'd like you to do is turn in your outline booklets to last night's outline, because I'm going to try to be sneaky here a bit. I'm going to see if I can get two sessions in this morning, because I hate to have extra blanks. And I don't want to take you all the way through and try to do this in one session. So I'm just going to break it up into two. We're going to begin by a bit of a review. Who was not here last night? There's a bunch of you who weren't here last night. So it's I think it'd be helpful to get a little overview, because you need to know your levels of friendship. And if you don't know what level you're on, you might be in trouble. In fact, I think we had people last night texting each other saying, what level friend are you? So we'll try to work our way to figure that out a bit. Then I'm going to cover just briefly some general principles of friendship, things to do and not to do towards friends. We'll take a break. You can get some coffee, you know, hit yourself in the head with a volleyball. And then we'll work our way through kind of a real life picture of friendship in Jonathan and David. So let's just kind of jump right in to our outline as we consider the nature of friendship. And first, again, we'll just review a little bit as far as the differing levels of friendship that are described in the Bible. And it's fascinating. When I went to T4G this year, Together for the Gospel, it was up in Louisville, and we took about 20 guys from the church. It was a sweet time to be with friends and those that I'd been here about 15 years. It'll be 15 years in July. And people that I've had the opportunity to work with and disciple and be friends with here. But it was a great joy as I was mingling with those 12,000 people that were at T4G. I kept running into people from my past, those who were involved in ministry or those who were helping out in a church. And one of the guys that I ran into was a guy named Jeff Edmonds, who was, I was a youth pastor in Missouri for about 10 years, beginning in 1992 to 2001. And he was in the first group of young men, or he was a junior at the time I got to the church in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. So he was in my youth ministry for 2 years, really became kind of a leader there. And when he left, he went to school. And then he moved to Texas and got involved in a youth group. He's an engineer, and he's been working as an engineer now for almost 22, 23 years. And yet he's been involved in youth ministry and helping out in this one particular church that he's been now for almost 20 years. And he's seen multiple groups of young people come through. And as we just sat talking, just being reminded of not only what the experiences we had together when he was in the youth group that I was leading, but then just that ongoing legacy of those that he has had the opportunity to impact, not as a full-time worker in one sense, we're all full-time, but as someone who has chosen to give his life to young people for those 22 years. He and his wife have no children. And so they've really kind of invested and adopted these youth groups that have come along. And really, it's been fascinating to hear him talk. They've invested in and kind of adopted youth pastors along the way. There's been like four or five different ones that have come through the church. They've been there consistently that entire time and have kind of just set the foundation for faithful work. Because that's 20 years ago. Someone that was a sophomore when I was, you know, entering into full-time work, and yet he's ongoing faithful in the ministry. And there was four or five other people that I met. Another guy, Ed Godfrey, was in the youth group that I was in when I was in ninth grade. I told some of you, I told you guys a bit of my story last night, where I met my mentor, Rocky Wyatt, when I was in ninth grade. Well, Ed came to Christ 2 years after that, about a year and a half after that. He started attending a year before I left that youth group. He came to Christ and has been faithfully involved in ministry now for all those many years. And I've had opportunity to do ministry with him over these years, once every couple of years. And so just to sit and to talk about the legacy of what the Lord had done, and friendships that are, we don't spend a lot of time communicating during the year, but when we come back together, they're instantly rekindled because of the nature of our shared interests, the fact that we have continued to pursue and to love Christ. And I could go on sharing with them. I mean, that was a friendship since I was in ninth grade, a person who came to Christ in the same youth ministry that I was in. Because I hold that out, again, not because I did something that made that happen, but the Lord was gracious to then put those people in my way and to build those kinds of relationships and then to guide and direct along the way so that we had ongoing interaction. And in this world of Facebook and social media, it amazes me that what seems to be happening with the ability to connect now with people instantly across the world with very few barriers is that friendships are becoming much more shallow. And instead of moving in our levels of friendship, instead everybody's less of a friend with everybody else than they've ever been. That's a travesty. It is a travesty that somehow we're now viewing our relationships as almost cast aside because I can Facebook you or I can Twitter you, I can text you. And so we're not, it seems to me that we're not investing the kinds of value in relationship that perhaps we once did. Or maybe we never really did. And yet, you guys, I would hope and pray that it would not be that 10 years from now, you wouldn't remember anybody from this group. There would have been no friendships developed, no solidity developed, people that you would, are loving the Lord with and walking in ministry with. That would be a tremendous shame. And so I hope that maybe even this weekend, you'll be considering, how am I pouring into and investing in the people that I know here so that in 10 years from now, I will have built the kinds of relationships? Because, I mean, think how many opportunities you have to keep in touch. You can go anywhere and instantly you can see pictures of each other and you can talk to each other. There's no reason to throw those relationships away. But the only thing that would do that is if, or would be an automatic barrier, is if you start to walk away from Christ. Because then, of course, the barriers go up because you're not involved in the same thing. So I just hold that out to you as a tremendous joy to consider the strength of ongoing friendships, even as you're continuing to build new ones. It's not like you get stuck in the past. You're like, oh, those friends were so great, and everybody back there was so wonderful, and I remember youth group, and then I remember college group. And no, it's that you love those people, and then you move on in relationship. That was the beauty of taking 20 guys from our church and then meeting all these other people that I'd had a chance to do ministry with because it was ongoing. And we were continuing to pour into each other's lives. So I hope and pray that that's what you'll do. Remember our levels from last night. Friendship, essentially, is the next closest relationship after that of a spouse or family. It's more intimate than just the people we hang out with, neighbors, the people we're around. A level one friendship, again, if we're going to level these out, might be one with whom you have a productive, peaceful relationship. You can do stuff together. There's no deep relationship there, but there's a friendship. A level two relationship would be one with whom you gladly and in a friendly manner share a common task, right? So you have a similar goal and objective, and you're working together shoulder to shoulder. What a great blessing that is. And that's what happens in the church. Really, all these levels move within the church with particular strength. And really, your goal is to kind of be interacting with people always, if you can, directing it towards greater levels of friendship, but understanding that you'll have these various levels probably in any given church, in any given group, with people that you know, but that there should be some level of friendship. A level three friendship, if we're going to go ahead and level those out, is where it moves really one more step, one who is kind, loyal, concerned for your welfare, someone who knows more about your situation, and someone who pays attention to it, and then someone who responds to things in your life with compassion and care because they're thinking of you. And they're concerned for you, and they're loyal to you. That is, the relationship is deep enough that they really sense a desire to be sure that they care for you, that they uplift you, that they don't backbite or gossip, things like that. And then we call what we call a level four relationship or friendship is one with whom you share really an increasing intimacy of relationship. There's companionship, there's deeper communication, there's not only shared interest, but a shared passion. And certainly in the body of Christ, that would be a passion for the Lord Jesus Christ. And it's that person that you unburden your soul to. And we might call that a soulmate. We'll see that in David and Jonathan. And again, every relationship isn't going to move that direction. Nor can you have a ton of those kinds of relationships necessarily. But people ought to always be on your mind as how am I interacting with them in friendship? And can I draw them closer? Is it appropriate? Can I press into their lives in such a way that we could extend or deepen our friendship, at least at some level? Trying to leave no one just where they're kind of off, where you never have talked to them. There's no level of friendship. They're just neighbors that show up, and particularly in the church, that would not be the case. You know, people in your own group, in your own church, particularly, where you're like, I have no idea who you are, and I don't really care. Right? You've got your own group of friends. I don't. And there's something about, we didn't talk about this last night, but this whole idea of cliques, you know, where people get together and they have their kind of exclusive groups of friends. You guys, that's just the nature of who we are. Right? Well, you're going to hang around with people that you know well, or that you're going to school with, or other things. That's not inherently wrong. It's only if that, what we call a clique, that group of friends, somehow isn't willing to face outwards and draw other people in and interact with others, and you're kind of moving in your groups, mingling with one another, not pretending that everybody has the same interests or that everybody is as close a friend as everybody else, but openly and consistently interacting with others in ways that are friendly. Because then it keeps it from, you know, I got to just bust into those cliques. You know why someone wants to, you know, talks about cliques in the church and gets so upset about them? Because they want to be in one. If you're on the outside going, well, there's all these cliques in the church. Essentially, you're saying, look, I want to be part of one. And then you're going to get in one, and what happens? The next person's going to come in and look at you as part of a clique. Because the goal is that you have groups of friends, that's fine, but you're constantly interacting with one another so that nothing becomes exclusive. And enjoy the shared, you know, maybe moving past just, you know, general interaction. Enjoy your shared interests and things. That's fine. But don't allow those things to be the things that drive you. So those were kind of our four levels of friendship. And you remember we added an additional one. We talked about kind of an authority relationship where you have a friendship with someone who is over you in authority. And that would be one that you, in order to have a true friendship with, you believe what they say, you trust them, and you do what they say. You believe them, you obey them, and you trust them. And it still can develop a deep and strong friendship. Again, much like I have had, certainly with my mentor who led me in ministry, but still he's always ahead of me. He's always 10 years ahead of me. And so there's always this sense in which I'm responding to him by looking ahead to say, what do you have to teach me? How can you help me to grow? So those are kind of the levels. And I hope that you're thinking through this. Again, you've got some labels to it, that's fine, but more you're thinking through it and how am I pressing into other people's lives so that I can increase or deepen a level of friendship as far as it can go, as far as it's appropriate, as far as it is there's opportunity, and you're not just saying, well, that's a level one friend, that's all he gets. You know, I'm going to leave him there or her there, but you're working towards deepening it if at all possible, and you're interacting with people. All right, well, now let's jump to the part of the outline where it talks about the things that you do not do to friends, right? So just as a general overview, let's look at some of the things that this makes for bad friendship. Now, we looked at good and bad friendships, in the Bible directly. I mean, are you Hushai the Archite, David's friend, or are you Jonadab, Amnon's friend, who led him into rape and ultimately murder? All right, or are you Hushai, who used his intelligence and wisdom to care for David's interests and really carve out for him, get him his kingdom back? I mean, which one are you? All right, so we talked about good and bad friendships. Now let's talk about, we're just going to fly over some of these general principles of friendship. Okay, some things that you should not do to friends. Well, you certainly shouldn't lead a friend astray spiritually. Deuteronomy 13:6, if your brother, your mother's son, and I read this last night, your son or your daughter, your wife you cherish, or your friend who is of your own soul, if they entice you secretly saying, let us go and serve other gods. It actually says you're supposed to turn them in so that you're supposed to walk away from them, and that was a punishable offense, an offense punishable by death in Israel. It's not punishable by death today, thankfully. You don't turn your friends in who are walking away from God to kill them. Right, but it is something that you can't afford to continue to press on with them in. And you would certainly never want to be the friend that starts to lead another friend away spiritually. And guys, you can do this very subtly where I've got all these questions and I'm constantly asking questions and I can't. It's fine to do that. It's fine if you're seeking the Lord in that. But sometimes what happens with that is all of a sudden you start putting doubts in other people's minds. I'm not sure this is true, and maybe it isn't, and you can't ever settle. As you want to be careful of that you're not leading someone astray when you do that. Hey, you certainly can do it more blatantly where you just start to walk away from God. This most often begins with your behavior. Rarely do you show up at college group and say, I now believe in Buddha. All right? It just doesn't work that way. I've become a Muslim. No, no, no. What happens is you show up and you begin, your life pattern begins to step away from obedience and worship of the one true God, and really starts with friendship with the world. That's almost always how that works, which is a God in and of itself. Really, that is the God of the world. All the other gods are reflective of what? The God of this world, Satan's own system, the world system that draws your sinful heart. Do not lead others astray spiritually. Be so careful that you are staying strong yourself. We'll talk about that tonight. Job 17:5 said, he who informs against a friend for a share of the spoil, the eyes of his children will languish. Don't betray a friend. There it's betraying a friend for money. But often we betray friends for influence. Somebody comes up and says, yeah, well, so-and-so, and what about so? And you start to betray someone that you would consider a friend so that you can gain a little bit of influence with somebody else. You kind of get in your mind, they're kind of hinting that person is no longer on kind of their level 4 friendship list. They're moving down the list. And so you're like, yeah. And you start to betray your friendship you have so you can get in good with this other crowd. These shifting loyalties. Oh, that doesn't happen in the church, does it? Oh, yes, it does. And all of a sudden, here you are kind of throwing your friend under the bus. You're betraying them for emotional collateral. That is, you want to get in good with this next group. Rarely do you do that purposely. All of a sudden, it's happening. Because we so easily shift our loyalties because we are so attuned to wanting everyone else's favor. And so if someone else goes out of favor a little bit, all of a sudden you're going, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. And you start moving in the direction that's going to give you the greatest favor. Don't do that. Friends don't do that. They stick to each other. They're loyal to one another at any level of friendship. And it's not like, well, if you're a really close friend, I'll do that for you. If you're a level one friend, you get thrown under the bus. No level of friendship should do that. Everyone is to be upheld by you. Don't return evil for good, clearly. Psalm 7, verse 4, if I have rewarded evil to my friend or plundered him without cause, who was my adversary? You wouldn't even do that to an adversary. Right? To an enemy, you wouldn't return evil for good. They give you good, you give them evil. So guys, be so careful that you are not, as you're interacting with each other, people are loving you and caring for you, and you're turning around and harming them. Just that's the antithesis of friendship, and yet often that can be the case for us. Don't be a fair weather friend. There's a whole bunch about this in Proverbs. Proverbs 19:4, wealth adds many friends, but a poor man is separated from his friend. Isn't that great? So the more advantageous things are for you, the more people want to hang around you. Right? And it's not so much money in our culture. Why? Because we're all rich. You're like, no, I'm not. I'm a starving college student. Yeah, you're not starving. All right, I'm barely making my school payment. Think about that, school payment. Those are first world problems. In the third world, they don't go to school, they try to eat. Okay, you're wondering, how do I get new tires on my car? Most of you, along with going to school, how do I get these cool things that I want? How do I get my game upgrades in your latest game? Guys, those are largely first world issues. Some of you, it's just, I just want to buy books for school. I get that. All right, but you guys, you're all rich. And so, because we're all rich, we're surrounded by other rich, happy people. And when we have any gain of influence, that's when people want to hang around us. It's a little bit as I described before. It's not so much when we get more stuff, although it can be that too. It has to do when we somehow kind of rise a level in the group or in the church, all of a sudden there's more people that want to be around us. And so those are fair weather friends. It says if you have advantageous circumstances, essentially, and people are becoming your friends as a result of that, and you want to be a friend with somebody because of that, that's bad friendship. You're not looking for the person who gets the latest advantage. This often happens with physical appearance, where someone just blossoms and all of a sudden they're really much better looking than they were before, right? They grow up and they and it's like, whoa, I'd like to be friends with you. Guys with guys do this, girls with girls, it's the same thing. It's not only male-female how this works. So it's this pecking order, who looks best, who can do the best. And so, the guy that looks really good, he's got a bunch of guy friends too. It's fair weather friendship. You look good, I'll be with you. I get to bask in your good lookingness. Now, guys, we don't do that necessarily on purpose, but think about it. It happens. And that's not the way we ought to be friends with people. The poor guy doesn't really have much, to as far as his physical appearance goes, and he's got fewer friends. Why is that? If this isn't really true. Okay, so we need to be really careful here. Girls works the same way for you, maybe more so. I've got to be really careful here that it's not just fair weather friends. If you've got an advantage, I want to be with you. We don't want to do that. Proverbs 19:7, all the brothers of a poor man hate him. His own family doesn't like him because he can't give them anything. See, this is all about advantage. If you can give me something, I'll be friends with you. I was talking to someone last night and they said, as I've interacted in the world, that's how I notice worldly friendships go. People will be friends with you in the world as long as you have something to give them. Maybe just you're interesting, you're cool, and all that's fine. The moment you stop being that to them, you're done. That's how those friendships work. They're constantly shifting. And if you can give them something, they'll be a friend. Should never be that way in the church. As long as you can give me something, as long as I get something from you, I'll be your friend. And then when that's no longer true, well, then I'll shift away and be a friend with someone over here. No fair weather friends, you guys. It says how many, again, Proverbs 19:7, how much more do his friends abandon him? So all the poor brothers of a poor man hate him. How much more do his friends abandon him? He pursues them with words, but they are gone. You almost get this picture. Guys, right, guys. You're on the hike, you're in the back, and your friends are like, dude, you're weak. They're guys. Where'd you go? Sounds like, the text stream. Whoa, where'd you go? Is anybody out there? Nobody's responding back. No high fives, no slaps, no whatever it is that you give each other. All the emojis that you can do. I like emojis, but... Don't take up a reproach against a friend, Proverbs 15:5. He does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against a friend. Hey, I'm gonna keep raising this issue and sticking it in your face. I'm going to find something to be angry with you about. I'm gonna work hard. Guys, we do that with each other. Constantly that friend who's just always got something against you, and you're like, what happened? Constantly finding something to come at you about, not in a legitimate thing, not in friendship or joy. Guys, don't take up reproaches against friends, just looking for stuff. That's not what friends do. They look for the things that are a blessing and benefit and ways to encourage and build up. I'm not saying, again, we don't confront in sin and work through those things. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about constantly looking for something to be upset about. That is bad friendship, and it's just not helpful. Don't take up a reproach against a friend. Don't be unconcerned about the pain of a friend. We talked about that last night. Psalm 38:11, my loved ones and my friends stand aloof from my plague. My kinsman stands far off. Everyone is great friends with me, and I'm going through this really difficult time, and where'd they all go? Could be a physical sickness, could just be a difficult time in your life, and they're like, ooh, being around you is kind of hard right now because you're going through a really rough time, and that's kind of rubbing off on us. So, you know, well, when you get better, come talk to us. And when you're feeling better, when life circumstances are a little better, and again, that's not something we necessarily do consciously, where we're like, I'm going to abandon you. It's just those kinds of people take a lot more work, don't they? When you're going through a really difficult time, there's a little bit more maintenance involved for you. And you know what? That's right and good. When we're wrestling and struggling, we ought to have people. What did Job say? There ought to be kindness from my friends so that I will not forsake the fear of Almighty God and turn away from God and man. People that are wrestling, they get some more maintenance and give it to them. Yeah, we ought to be working so that we don't always require that. Because that can be very draining, where you're just the person that's always sucking everyone dry. I'm not really talking about that. That's a different problem. That's a problem on your side, where you're just never getting helped. You're never increasing. You're never growing. You're never recovering. That's not good. But as people wrestle and struggle and move in and out of areas of difficulty, then you ought to be moving in and out of those things with them. I'm not saying come back and talk to me. Come back into my sphere when things are better for you. Breaking trust with a friend, don't do that. Psalm 41:9. Even my close friends whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted up my heel against me. It's used as prophetically. Jesus uses that. Or it's used in the New Testament. But you guys, when your friends trust you, don't break trust. Do anything you can to retain that trust. Don't lie about them. Don't tell them things you're going to do that you don't. Apologize when you do that kind of thing. If you do break trust, quickly move to speak to them and try to work through that, because we do. You know that the easiest way, of course, to break trust is to talk about someone behind their back, to all of a sudden you're one person with them and another person with somebody else. And you know what? They find out about that. In a church, they're always going to know. You can't hold up that kind of two-faced thing. There's just too much going on. They're going to know. And so if you do that, you might as well turn around. It's like, well, I don't know if I should tell them that I did that, because I don't know if they know about it. And if I tell them about it and I apologize for it, I'm going to reveal them to things that they didn't know. Because if you've betrayed someone, if you've done something wrong, you need to go and make sure that you restore that trust. This is related to the next one. Don't slander a friend. A perverse man, Proverbs 16:28, spreads strife. A slanderer separates intimate friends. There's probably not one of you in this barn that hasn't had that happen to you. Slanderer separates intimate friends. And a friendship has been harmed. Or seemingly ruined because someone came and began saying words that might have been true, but they were just in the wrong circumstance, to the wrong people, at the wrong place, or simply untrue, or weighted inappropriately one direction or another, which is the same as a lie. Because this destroys intimate friendships. Those level 4 friendships you were trying to get, and certainly going to harm every one of your other kinds of friendships. This is a huge problem in Christian circles. It's not just among teenagers and college students and the church. This blows churches apart, destroys relationships day in and day out, literally daily. And you understand slander, right? Slander can be as much as a raised eyebrow. Hey, I was talking to Bill the other day. Ooh, what's wrong with Bill? What's that raised eyebrow about? Well, I can't tell you. Pray for Bill. Great. Bill's dead in that person's eyes. So the next time I look at Bill, I'm like, I wonder what he did. So harmful. Just something like that can harm someone's reputation. That little. You better be really careful, you guys. Controlling even your body language when you talk about people. Because those things communicate. And of course, you need to be careful here that you're not so, you know, constantly looking for those little clues. You become the slanderer kind of on the other side. We're constantly looking, kind of draw that out of people. And tell me more about that. And why'd you do that? And no, no, tell me more about so-and-so. And what were you really thinking? And why'd you give the raised eyebrow? You are not to go there. And don't draw that out of other people. Don't turn them into slanderers as you just keep badgering them about the things you want to know about other people. And of course, our social media does this. It just multiplies this a million times. There's all kinds of slander, all kinds of things going on, subtly saying things about people and subtle, seemingly subtle comments that aren't. Guys, don't slander your friends. And of course, that means don't slander anyone, what we say in the body of Christ. And that's not, don't slander anybody ever, of course. But certainly you wouldn't do that to a friend. Here's one of my favorites to make it a little lighter at this point. Don't be obnoxious to a friend. Like, what? Hey, Proverbs 27:14. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning, it will be reckoned a curse to him. Some of you did that this morning. Okay? Good morning, good morning, good morning. It's time to rise. You're like, ah, okay, that's probably not what really what he's talking about. But it's saying, look, friendship, and do hear me carefully here. Friendship doesn't give you the right to be obnoxious, to just be grating. Because some of you are like that. I'm not speaking of anyone in particular, okay? You're all pretty wonderful people that I, you know, as nearly as I can tell. But some of you just think that's cool. It's obnoxious. And you're biting or harsh or in people's faces, and you're like, that's who I am. That's cool. It's not cool. That is not friendship. When you make it hard to get close to you because you're obnoxious, stop being obnoxious. Stop doing things which just by the very nature of what they do, make it harder for people to appreciate you. That's the idea. I mean, you know, when you're lying there asleep, and again, you know, if joking, goofing off, this can be fine, but you know, you're just waking up, you're on your cot, you're sleeping there, someone sticks his face, wake up! I mean, it's just a picture of, it's really hard for me to like you right now. I'm just, this is not helping my level 4 friendship. Go away from my face, you're too close. That's the picture. Again, it doesn't mean that just talking to someone early in the morning is the only. Don't do things that make it hard for people to relate to you. Hey, some of you, again, you've just got weird things about you. Anything? Sorry, guys, it's the way it is. And you as a member, it's a general you. I'm speaking of all the youth groups and all the college students that I've worked with, okay? And I certainly, and still do now, I'm sure, but as I was growing up, and one of the things my mentor did for me is he would say, you know what? You do weird things. I lived with him in his home for a period of time, and he took me out one day, and we would go out for a thing called a Coke. Now, again, in the South, a Coke can be Pepsi or it can be anything, but in where I was, a Coke was actually a Coke, and so you'd go get a Coca-Cola, and he didn't know, but every time he would take me out and for a Coke, he would then confront me on some sin, and he didn't really realize he was doing that, and so he'd go, let's go for a Coke, and I'd be like, no, no Coke. I'm done. In fact, later on, he used to do this to everybody, all the people he was training. When he moved to Texas and he got a swimming pool, what we did for his, it was like his 15th or maybe 20th anniversary in ministry, we all pitched in and we bought like, I don't know how many cases of Coke. I mean, and we filled his pool with it. Not we didn't pour it in. We put the cans in there. All right. Yeah. So we didn't ruin the pool. All right. But it was awesome because it's like we're always getting Cokes. And he took me out one time for a Coke and he said, you know what? It's hard to sit at the table with you because you chew with your mouth open. I was 20 years old. Now, a 20-year-old shouldn't be chewing with their mouth open, and I probably still do. My wife's probably going, you do that now. But yes, why did he approach me with that? Because it just made it obnoxious. It was hard to sit at the table with me. Maybe that will help you as a picture. And believe me, there were other things where he said, look, it's hard to get to know you. It's harder to like you because you do this weird stuff. It's not that we all conform and everybody acts the same and you all got to say, you know, yes and no. But you should be doing things which make it easy for people to enter into relationship with you. Remove the weirdness. That's what that verse really is kind of talking about. Don't be obnoxious. Don't be doing these things that just make it hard for people to relate to you. Love is not obnoxious, right? Love does not act unbecomingly. That's really kind of what that word means in 1 Corinthians 13, just in ways that just make it hard to want to be with you. Love should overcome that. So do with that as you will. Some of you are like, oh, there's nothing weird about me. You maybe ask a friend, what's the thing that just, it makes it kind of hard for me to get over? I love you, I care for you, but maybe you would stop doing that thing. It would be easier just for us to relate. Okay, things you should do for friends. We'll just blast through these. Be consistent. Proverbs 17:17, a friend loves at all times. A brother is born for adversity. He goes, you don't want this friendship up and down thing. Are you my friend today or not my friend? People do that in junior high. Okay, in junior high, they write notes. You know, check the box. You know, what do you think about me? I really like you. I can't stand you. I sometimes think you're okay. I mean, I just got one of those that I intercepted from my daughter, my 12-year-old daughter, to someone else in the church the other day. I mean, the perfect checkbox thing that I did when I was in junior high. Checkbox? I mean, what? She's 12. And so we had a discussion about the checkboxes. That's not how you develop friendships. You know, pick one of these. I am your bosom buddy. I can't stand you. That's not how we do that. You got to work through friendship. You got to talk. You got to be a friend. But you shouldn't be doing that in college, where it's kind of a, you don't send people those notes. Well, maybe on your Facebook kind of things you do. Like me. You know, oh, emoji at me. Whatever I may. That's on there, isn't it? It's there. You guys, that's not how we do friendship. It's consistent. I'm your friend always. And even when you are obnoxious, like Chris just said, I'm not supposed to be, I'm still your friend. Today it's not any different than it was yesterday. And even when you did that thing towards me yesterday, you call me up today, you text me today, I'm still your friend. I'm here. It's consistent. And guys, I've had people that have consistently been in my life now, let's see, I'm 50, you know, when I was 15, 35 years, who will consistently say, I'm here. I care for you. And when I go through difficult times, they're there. And they have been for 35 years. I'm thankful for friends like that. Be consistent. Cultivate a pure heart and kind speech. Proverbs 22:11. He who loves purity of heart, whose speech is gracious. The king is his friend. You want friends? You don't want to influence people? Be kind and pure. That's more for tonight. Provide godly rebuke and instruction. Proverbs 27:6, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Guys, the wounds of a friend, not the wounds of some kind of opponent who constantly slanders you, who never has anything good to say about you, and gets their kicks out of confronting your sin. That's not a friend. A friend loves you, cares for you, has made that clear. There's a strong relationship, or at least that you know that they care for you, and then they confront your sin. That's Proverbs 27:6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Provides godly rebuke and instruction. That's C. Yes, this is so important that you would long to be the kind of friend that is able to speak into the life of your other friends by confronting sin, but they understand that you have a relationship with them so they can receive the things you have to say. And if they tell you things like, you know, I'm trying to listen to you, but this is always the way you are. You are always rebuking me. You know, those Cokes that I got with my mentor? It wasn't just that. It wasn't always go out for Coke. By the way, ice cream was good. When we went out for ice cream, that was good. Let's go get ice cream. Good, I want to do that. Let's get some ice cream. There was lots of encouragement along the way. And I could receive his rebuke because of the strong relationship that we had. I knew he cared for me. Now, you should receive a rebuke anyway. You should always listen to a rebuke. But that's not what this verse is talking about. It's going on rebuking people. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Oh, you're wonderful. You're great. Yeah, you're in that sin. That's okay. It's all cool. Great. That's the kiss of an enemy. It's the kiss of death. Or a friend would watch you walk off into sin and go, that's all right. Really? It's like Hiram, the Adullamite, watching Judah go into the prostitute. That's okay. Cool, I'm your friend. No, not cool. An enemy would do that. Friends say no. And it's faithful, and you ought to view it as that. Thank you, and you ought to draw that out. I imagine that most of you do that. I pray that you do, and that you're learning how to do it better, because you need to get better, because when you enter into your adulter life, you need to be really good at this. And if you've never tried doing it, then you're not very good at it later. You're going to have to do this with your husband and wife. You're going to have to learn how to confront each other's sins and work through that. And you need to know how to do that now. So you should be doing that male to male, female to female now. We have a new members class, and I often ask people, I mean, do you want to come to a church where someone is going to faithfully wound you? And are you willing, if you come to a church like that, to be one who's a friend enough that you'd faithfully wound someone else by bringing rebuke? Galatians 6. Beloved, if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill the law of Christ. You want to be in a church like that? You want to be in a college group like that? Some people are like, oh, this college group, man, it's always talking about sin. I hope there's some of that going on. I hope there's enough friendships going on here that you talk about each other's sin. And I also hope there's enough friendship going on that by its very nature there was already encouragement and spurring on to love and good deeds. Empathize with people's pain. That's kind of the opposite of ignoring them in pain. So Proverbs 35:14. So when someone is in pain, you with them, you care for them, you pray for them. You learn how to enter into that with them. By the way, you don't go and tell them, hey, I know exactly what you're going through. I've been there. You don't. You're not them. But you can say, I empathize with that. And I want you to know that I cannot enter fully into it because it's yours. It's what you're doing. But I can empathize. I can feel your pain in that way, and I want to do that with you. Don't be the know-it-all. You know, I know how to fix that. God is sovereign. He is sovereign. But you enter into someone's difficulty because the Lord enters into yours in a real way. He doesn't just say, I'm sovereign. Be quiet. He says, I'm sovereign. I love you. And I'll work you through this. I'll give you strength to work through this pain and this difficulty. I'll strengthen you even as he shows us his goodness. Be that kind of friend. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Luke 15:6. Luke 15:9, all these are talking about someone who loses something. Luke 15:9 says, when she found it, she found a coin that she lost. She called all her friends and neighbors saying, rejoice with me, I found the coin which I've lost. You should be quick to rejoice with people instead of always cutting them down when something good happens to them. Or always subtly being jealous of them. Imagine all those people coming over to the woman, she found her coin, she was poor, that one coin was probably her rent payment. So she rejoiced in finding, today, you find money in your wallet, you're like, yeah, but you're not about to lose your house. Right? But you're about to lose your house, you find the check that was lost, and you, hey, come on over and party with me. You got people that are going, she doesn't deserve that. And why is this a big deal? It's not what friends do. They enter into the rejoicing with you with sincerity of heart. They love to rejoice with you. And then lastly, cultivate friendships for the long haul. And that means generational. Now, we're about to look into a generational friendship. That is a friendship that transcended the initial generation of the friendship. Do you understand that friendships like that really exhibit the strongest kind of tie? Proverbs 27:10, do not forsake your friend or your father's friend. It's like, oh, it's all about me, man. My friends, we're cool, fist bump. And yet, if you are truly friends, then that should extend even generationally where, you love your father and care for your father, so you then love and care for his friends. And that moves its way down generationally. So the next generation, your friends' children, you are friends with. And again, this has been a sweet thing in my own life, again, with this man that I've known for so many years. As his sons began to progress, I had the precious privilege of working with them in discipleship. And I was living out in California. One of his friends went to school out in California, or his sons. And I was able to meet together with him. And it was just a neat thing to know that this man who had poured his life into me, I now had the privilege of pouring my life into his son. And I've maintained a relationship with both of them in such a way that it's just been a sweet thing. Why? Because I love him, and so I love his children. And because he's been such a blessing and benefit to me, I want to be a blessing and a benefit to them. Because that's the kind of friendships we're talking about here. That's a friendship that lasts over the generations. You ought to be cultivating those. I hope that you will have some of those. Again, those aren't dime a dozen. It's not everybody that's the case or that you can retain that kind of closeness with. But I'm privileged in my own life to have had some of those. And I've had then other people who are friends of mine who pour into my own children and care for them because they love me. They automatically, as it were, transfer that to my children because that friendship works its way through the generation. That's pretty powerful. And so those are the kinds of things, those just kind of, in one sense, general principles I want you to be considering. It's kind of a shotgun, scattering. We're going to focus a little more tonight and a little more structured as, again, those are kind of descriptive principles, and we're going to look directly at the church tonight. But I hope those will, as you think through that they'll give you some food for thought about your own friendships. Okay, we're just going to break here because you're tired. I want you to stand up, get some coffee, get something to drink. We'll take about a 5-minute break, 7-minute break, and then we'll come back and talk about David and Jonathan.